Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past. Our Inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune. A fortune compounded of many things. Of log cabins built in the wilderness. And the voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is a tall, gaunt man holding a nation together through a cruel war. Canal built across fever-ridden Panama. And an airman alone over the Atlantic Ocean in the spirit of St. Louis. Let us now go back to a decisive period in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. In the Mount Auburn Cemetery near Boston, Massachusetts, is a marble marker bearing the simple legend, Dorothea L. Dix. Over it stand the American flag and the standard of the Corps of Army Nurses. Why is Dorothea Dix so honored? Because of a mission to which she dedicated her life, a mission which she described in these words.
To bring a little comfort where there's pain, a little reason where there's ignorance, a little hope where there's fear, and a little progress. I have faith in the people of this state and of this country. If they're given the truth, if they're informed of injustice and brutality, they will act.
This is the story of Dorothea Lynde Dix's fight to wipe out such injustice and brutality, and to bring light where there was only darkness. It begins on a Sunday morning in 1841.
Dorothea.
Anne, oh, how nice to see you. Come on in.
I just stopped by to find out if you were going to the cotillion on Wednesday night and to ask you to attend church with me this morning.
Can you speak of dancing and church in the same breath?
Why, Anne. Is that terribly wicked of me?
We do not judge others by their sins, Anne, but rather by the work of their hands.
Well, then, since I am without doubt the unhandiest of women, there is no hope for my salvation. Seriously, Dorothea, you do plan to attend the cotillion, don't you?
I'm afraid not, Anne.
Oh.
My school for the poor children keeps me far too occupied for such pleasure.
Oh, but Dorothea, since your grandmother died, you go nowhere, you rarely entertain, you just live in this big house all alone.
I'm not alone. I have my children.
Your children, indeed. Would they were your children.
Anne.
Oh, I know what you're doing for them is wonderful, but you're in your 30s, Dorothea. When are you going to start thinking about your own happiness?
Anne, dearest, I appreciate your concern for me, but I'm perfectly happy as I am doing what I'm doing.
Well, you know what you want out of life, and I know what I want. A little laughter and dancing, and a carriage ride in the commons with the handsomest man in Boston.
And you will no doubt find all of these.
Oh, Dorothea, please do say you'll change your mind about the cotillion. It will be the affair of the year.
I'm sorry, Anne. I really can't go.
Well, there are 3 days before then. Perhaps you'll have a change of heart.
Anne Heath, you are a nag.
And you, Dorothea Dix, are a stubborn mule. Well, now that we have duly insulted each other, put on your bonnet and we'll be on our way to church.
I'm afraid you'll have to go without me.
You're not going to church?
Not this morning. But I'm certain the good Lord will forgive me. I have other plans.
Well, now, what could be more important this beautiful Sunday morning than going to church?
Going to jail.
Dorothea.
Now, don't look so shocked, Anne. One of the students at the Harvard Divinity School has been giving Sunday school instruction to the women inmates at the East Cambridge jail.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't been too successful, and it was felt that perhaps a woman instructor might make better progress. So, when I was asked to take his place, I accepted.
But in a jail?
And why not in a jail?
Well, simply because a jail is hardly a proper place for a woman of gentility. Well, what can you be thinking of, Dorothea?
I'm thinking of something the Bible tells us. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. He's shown me the way, Anne, and I must follow. Do you think they enjoyed my little Bible talk, matron?
Oh, yes, Miss Dix. My ladies were most attentive.
They seem so to me. I trust you don't mind my asking to be shown about the jail.
Why should I mind? We have visitors every day.
Are the women here difficult to handle?
We manage to keep them in their place. Small place, though it is, we're that crowded.
Is there no other house of correction to which they may be sent?
None. They're all as bad off as we are here.
How dreadful. Someone singing.
It's Clara.
What a sweet voice.
You'd hardly think so if you had to listen to her sing that same song day in and day out.
May I speak with her?
Clara doesn't have many visitors.
Just for a moment.
Very well, but it'd be a waste of time. That's Clara.
How pale she is. How thin.
She won't eat. Hasn't touched a thing for 2 days.
Oh, poor thing. She looks so frightened. Hello, Clara. Don't be frightened. I'm your friend.
You can save your breath. She won't answer you. She won't talk to anyone.
Why not?
Just out of plain stubbornness. Some of them get that way. Shall we go on?
Yes. Goodbye, Clara. Matron.
Yes?
Her hand, it's like ice. And see how she trembles with cold.
It'll pass.
Haven't you blankets to give her? No warm clothes?
There's no need to waste such things on the likes of her.
But she's freezing.
Well, she doesn't know that.
What? I don't understand.
Clara's one of the loonies.
The loonies? She's insane.
Crazy as a loon.
And what is she doing here in a house of correction, surrounded by criminals and murderers? Why is she not in a hospital where she can receive proper attention?
Ma'am, the hospitals are crowded with those who can pay for their care. Those who cannot pay are sent to the jails.
This is monstrous. That human beings must be subjected to such neglect.
Do not distress yourself, Miss Dix. The loonies don't know what's going on, and no one cares if they do.
You're mistaken, matron. Someone does care.
Yes? Come in.
Dr. Sumner?
Yes?
I'm Dorothea Dix.
Oh, yes. I was told you wished to speak with me. Sit down, please.
Thank you.
Now then, what may I do for you?
Dr. Sumner, you are a member of the Boston Prison Discipline Society, are you not?
I am.
And as such, is it not your duty to investigate improper conditions in our houses of correction?
It is, Miss Dix.
Sir, a few days ago, I had occasion to visit the Cambridge jail.
You visited Cambridge?
I did indeed. And I found conditions there to be the most deplorable. Not only was it in an overcrowded condition, but I discovered something else, much to my horror.
Yes?
Those poor unfortunates who are mentally ill and cannot afford proper treatment are also thrown into such places as Cambridge. Tell me, Doctor, do you consider such action to be just?
Miss Dix, we are aware of conditions in Cambridge jail, but unfortunately it would take a great deal of money to correct these conditions.
Then something should be done to get such an appropriation. When I saw those poor souls shivering with cold, ignored and abandoned, simply because in our ignorance we believe the mentally ill are insensible to feeling, it was then that I decided something must be done to change all that.
And what do you suggest?
I suggest that such conditions be brought to light. I believe that people who have little or no contact with their prisons and almshouses are completely unaware that such conditions exist. I also believe that it's the duty of the state to provide proper homes and treatment for the mentally ill.
Miss Dix, what you suggest is most admirable. But do you realize what your suggestion would entail? Before the people could be made acquainted with the unfortunate conditions which exist, a survey would have to be made of every prison, every house of correction, and private home where the mentally ill are kept.
Then such a survey must be made.
That we would like very much to do. But as I told you before, the legislature will not give us an appropriation. I am truly sorry, but our hands are tied.
Perhaps your hands are tied, Dr. Sumner, but mine are not. I will make the survey myself.
But, Miss Dix, the expense of a survey. Where would you get the money? There would be traveling expenses, correspondence.
I have some income from my grandmother's estate. And what else I may need, I shall borrow.
This is not an easy task you have chosen for yourself. It may take months, even years.
Believe me, time is of no importance, Dr. Sumner. If I can awaken the people to the conditions in our houses of detention...
In the spring of 1842, Dorothea Dix gave up her school and began her pilgrimage of mercy. For 18 months, she went from town to town, by slow-moving trains, by boat, in fair weather, in snow, in rain. There was not an almshouse, workhouse, or prison in the entire state of Massachusetts which she did not visit at least once. She found inmates locked in closets, dripping cellars and pens. She found them in chains, naked and cold, beaten with rods and lashed into dumb obedience. And in some of the prisons, she found people confined to cages.
They're called Utica cribs, ma'am. We keep the real dangerous ones in them.
Like wild animals.
That's about what they are, ma'am. Wild animals.
How long do you keep them in these cages?
Until they die.
I see.
Care to go on, ma'am?
I most certainly would.
Now, you take that old lady there. Nigh on 14 years she's been here. And gave us a bit of trouble at first, but now she just lays there staring at the ceiling.
Poor thing.
Oh, don't waste your pity on them, ma'am. They're happy.
Oh, of that I'm certain. How could they be otherwise with such comfortable living quarters?
I guess they are comfortable at that, ma'am. Leastwise for them crazy fools they are.
That young man over there, why is he crying?
Doesn't do anything else but cry, ma'am.
How long has he been here?
Oh, he's a new one. Only been here a year or two.
Is he fed properly?
Yes, ma'am. We throw slops in that trough every sundown.
And his cage, is it ever cleaned?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Once a week, regular.
What happens to him in the wintertime? Surely you don't keep him in that filthy cage then.
Oh, no, ma'am. During the winter, we have a special pit to put him in.
A pit?
Yeah, a deep hole in the ground. But we don't worry none about him trying to escape. There's heavy stones to hold down the cover.
And he stays in there all winter with no light or warmth?
Oh, he gets plenty of light. We take off the cover at sundown to give him his slops. You see, ma'am, we don't believe in pampering him none. Like you said, ma'am, they're the same as wild animals. And that's how we treat them.
But, Dorothy, you can't continue with this terrible work. It's making you ill.
I must, Anne. If I never accomplish another thing in my life, this is one task I must finish. Oh, if you could have seen the misery and the filth of the poor souls, broken in mind, but with eyes that begged for a little help and understanding. If you had seen these things as I've seen them, you would not try to stop me, Anne.
Probably not. Here's your tea, dear.
If only people would understand, if they could be taught that those whom they call the loonies and crazy are actually suffering from an illness. An illness of the mind, perhaps, but one which needs as much attention as scarlet fever, malaria, or cholera.
But, Dorothea, there must be others who could handle this problem which has so taken hold of you. After all, this is hardly the proper work for...
For a lady of gentility? I know, Anne. You've informed me of that fact many times.
I'm not the only one who feels that way. Several of our friends have remarked on this improper pursuit of yours.
Improper, indeed. Would that I knew their names, Anne, so I could show them the true meaning of impropriety.
Well, then you are determined to go on with your work.
I am indeed so determined that I'm going to ask permission to make a report to the state legislature.
Dorothea!
It will not be a pretty report, Anne, and certainly not what you might expect to hear from the lips of a lady of gentility. But if I can shock them with the truth and spur them into action, then these past 2 years will not have been wasted. So, gentlemen of this legislature, I come to the end of my report. I've described the almost unbearable living conditions in our prisons and almshouses, the filth and the lack of proper food. I've told you of the people locked in the Utica cribs and of a penniless 15-year-old expectant mother confined to an almshouse because she suffered with fits. Forced to give birth to her child in a cell filled with hopeless mental cases. Most of all, gentlemen, I've tried to illustrate the complete absence of compassion and of understanding which might bring mental or physical comfort to the unfortunates now under detention. I implore you, in this legislation, that you exercise that wisdom which is the breath and the power of God. Kitchen, Anne.
Dorothea, have you seen the newspaper?
No, not today, Anne. But what news is there that has blown you into my kitchen like a gust of wind?
It's all about you, Dorothea.
Me?
Since the legislature began to investigate your charges, they've stirred up a virtual hornet's nest of complaints.
So at last we shall see some action taken. Anne, hand me those eggs, please.
Oh, here.
Thank you.
Now just listen to this. Here's what a jailer in Chelsea said. The woman, that's you, the woman told a pack of lies. We give our patients the best of treatment. What she has said is slanderous.
The jail at Chelsea was one of the worst.
And a Back Bay social leader says, Miss Dix's insinuation into the world where men have proper domain has brought disgrace on her sex as well as her family name.
She's probably never left the confines of her drawing room. Now, let's see a few drops of extra.
Now, listen. Here are the words of an almshouse superintendent in Bedford. Nothing like what she claims ever goes on at any place where I am in charge. Dorothea, how long are you going to let them continue to say and print such things about you?
As long as it takes to wake the people up to the conditions which exist. Anne, would you mix a batter for me, please? I have some biscuits to put in the oven.
Well, they talk about you as though you were some sort of a witch trying to stir up trouble.
I am trying to stir up trouble. If they wish to call me a witch, that is their pleasure.
But how can the people who run the prisons and almshouses say these things about you when they themselves are the ones who are doing wrong?
Wrong? Yes, they are wrong, Anne, but... I believe that most of the wardens and keepers and jailers do wrong not so much through hardness of heart or willful cruelty as they do because of a lack of skill and knowledge and consideration.
And you think the legislature would change all that if they vote in favor of your recommendations?
Not if. When they vote in favor of them, as I know they will. Anne, open the oven door for me, please.
Following the angry outbursts from a public which didn't understand her motives, and from prison and almshouse keepers who refused to admit their guilt, the tide began to turn in favor of Dorothea Dix's crusade. Supporters sprang up everywhere. Their letters flooded the newspapers. At first, the letters came from doctors who already knew of the conditions which existed. Then statesmen, legislators, and even many of the public took it upon themselves to visit the prisons and almshouses to conduct their own investigation. And as the days went by, Dorothea Dix waited anxiously for word from the legislature. And at last it came.
So here you are, Miss Dix.
Why, Dr. Sumner, what a pleasant surprise. Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
Tell me, Doctor, what brings you to the park?
A charming lady.
Why, Doctor, are you here for rendezvous?
Indeed I am. For rendezvous gives me a great deal of pleasure to keep.
She must be an exceptional woman to deserve such praise.
She is most exceptional.
Though I'm not one to hold with scandal, Doctor, is she perhaps someone of my acquaintance?
She is yourself.
You've come here for a rendezvous with me.
I have. And to bring you some news which will make you very happy.
Now, what news could possibly... Dr. Sumner.
I've come straight here from a meeting of the legislature.
They voted on my bill?
Yes.
And?
My heartiest congratulations, my dear. It was passed.
My heart is too full for words. But may the Almighty God give me strength to face the work which now lies ahead of me.
Dorothea Dix's crusade had not been in vain. The hospital bill was passed, and the citizens of Massachusetts at last awoke to their obligation toward those who needed mental care. Following her success in Massachusetts, Dorothea Dix began a nationwide campaign to expose the problems of the mentally ill. By 1847, she had visited 18 state penitentiaries, 300 county jails and houses of correction, and over 500 almshouses. Through her efforts, state hospitals were established, and the mentally ill were released from their chains in Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, and seven other southern states. But her work was not yet finished. When the Civil War broke out in 1861, Dorothea Dix offered her services to Secretary of War Cameron. She was appointed Superintendent of Nursing and gathered together the first Nurses' Corps of the United States Army. During the 4 years of the war, she worked unceasingly to bring aid and comfort to the wounded and the dying. Even after hostilities had ended, she continued to serve her country until her work was finished. Before she left for home, she was called to Washington in the office of the Secretary of War.
I cannot begin to tell you, Miss Dix, what your work has meant to your country and your countrymen.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
There is no way we can repay you for your great service, but we do wish to make some recognition of what you have done.
I ask for no recognition.
Would you consider a vote of money from Congress?
I'm afraid the country's needs at this moment are greater than mine, but...
Yes, Miss Dix?
There is one gift I would cherish above all others.
And that is?
The flag of my country.
On January 25th, 1867, Dorothea Dix received a box containing a stand of the national colors, together with a copy of an order from the Secretary of War.
In token and acknowledgement of the inestimable service rendered by Miss Dorothea L. Dix for the care, succor, and relief of the sick and wounded soldiers of the United States on the battlefield, in camps and hospitals during the recent war, and of her benevolent and diligent labors and devoted efforts to whatever might contribute to their comfort and welfare, it is ordered that a stand of arms of the United States colors be presented to Miss Dix.
So it was that Dorothea Dix came to the end of a task which had taken her some 26 years to complete. A task which brought new reforms and established state hospitals. A task which brought a ray of light to the darkened, hopeless world of the mentally ill, who were no longer treated as wild animals. Dorothea Dix also took her place on the battlefield as head of the United States Corps of Army Nurses. But the inheritance which she left us goes beyond these material goods. She also taught us compassion and understanding, selflessness and love for one's fellow men. This is the true meaning of Dorothea Dix's inheritance.
Nobody knows the trouble. I was hungered, and ye gave me meat.
I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me.
You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. We're privileged this evening to hear from the National President of the American Legion Auxiliary, Mrs. Harold S. Burdett.
The heartwarming story of the life and work of Dorothea Dix, which we have just heard, is a moving demonstration of a quality not uncommon among Americans, the dedication of countless men and women to the care and protection of their less fortunate neighbors has throughout our history brought this nation to the forefront as a great humanitarian force. From the individual efforts of many like Dorothea Dix, we have, through our duly elected representatives, insisted that proper provision be made by local, state, and federal government for the care of the unfortunate. Private organizations and individuals are constantly at work to help those who, because of age, illness, or other disability, need personal assistance and encouragement. There is no more effective weapon against communism than the unselfish spirit of the American people. As president of the American Legion Auxiliary, an organization of 1 million American women, I am exceedingly proud of one of this organization's major programs, which is a helping hand activity in the truest sense of that phrase. The American Legion and the American Legion Auxiliary have since 1925 channeled over $100 million into child welfare work. Most of this was spent in material aid to needy children of veterans. The remainder was instrumental in maintaining informational services, research, and legislation beneficial to underprivileged youth. Rehabilitation of veterans has been another great concern of the American Legion and Auxiliary. Our accomplishments in veterans legislation, medical and hospital benefits, job finding, and general counseling are all well known. It has been a pleasure to appear on Inheritance and to hear a story of personal dedication and reform so characteristic of this country. So long as Americans recognize their responsibility to their fellow man and respond so generously, we need not fear those who preach the absolute dictatorship of the state, for we are a people with a big heart and a belief in the dignity of man.
Thank you, Mrs. Harold S. Burdett. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey to the pages of history, to a time when Americans, dreaming of the future, forged that which we possess today. Today's story of Dorothea Lynde Dix was written by Earl Hammer and featured Margaret Hayes as Dorothea Dix. Included in the cast were Lillian Baya, Irene Tedrow, Gail Bonney, James Nusser, Frank Gerstle, and Howard Culver. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced and directed for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. John Wall speaking. Tomorrow, hear Two in the Balcony. It's on the NBC Radio Network.